Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Mary Urena.
And this is Back Talk. And Mary, this movie that you've selected for us today.
I'm either going to get the blame or the credit.
No, here we go. First of all, it is such a cumbersome title in some way that I even miswrote it on our board here, if people could see on our video portion, because I assumed that it would have
the
comma.
Yes.
And it doesn't have a comma.
It does not.
And I'm wondering if that's purposeful. It must be because there are a lot of English majors hanging about Hollywood studios would never let them have a conditional clause like that without the comma.
They would never. It's creative license, I'm sure. I don't know why, though.
I know.
But the movie we're reviewing today is yes. If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Mary, what is the title? What a weird title. Tell
it
me.
It is weird. So according to the writer, director, and actually actress who's in the film, Mary Bronstein, it has to do with the saying, if I had a leg to stand on. And in this case, the character of Linda that we're on this fever dream journey with as she really gets pushed to and goes over the edge in her life, she doesn't have a leg to stand on and can't fight back. So it's in relation to that.
Figuratively, it certainly works.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the most disquieting film of the year. The most disturbing film of the year.
I don't know. You've seen some pretty dark films.
I have. But I will tell you, her performance is stellar.
Yes.
It is a really good one. You and I were talking before the show how much we like Jesse Buckley's performance in Hamnet and how we believe that is really the top performance. But Rose Byrne. What a discovery. I've seen her before, and she's a beautiful woman, and she knows how to act. The extent of this acting is truly unbelievable.
Well, the way the film is created, it's actually inspired by Mary Bronstein's life. Several years ago, her young daughter faced an illness that uprooted the family for 8 to 10 months so that the daughter could be treated at a specialty hotel. They lived out of a hotel. It's really her view of an abstraction and an absurdity as to how a woman can feel so consumed and be pushed into this vortex of meeting everybody else's needs in crisis after crisis after crisis, and the impact that it can have on her. And Rose Byrne plays Linda, who clearly carries this entire film.
It is. I mean, there, practically every shot is of her, and it's a close-up.
And it's intentional.
Whoa,
because
yes.
Everything about the film we're supposed to experience from Linda's perspective. We do that. In fact, the daughter who we hear and see her feet or
yes.
her arms, or but we never see her till the very
end. Yeah.
But we hear her and hear the interactions. And even when they're talking in the car, we're either seeing Linda's face or we're seeing Linda's face in the rearview
yes,
mirror
yes.
looking at her
yes.
daughter. Everything about it is from Linda's perspective. And so you're on this spiral with her downward until she goes over the edge.
Well, I mean, for me, it's a mosaic of madness. And it seemed to me that Bronstein had captured individual moments of every woman who ever lived and put them all together. And I'm very sensitive about the feminist movement, and I'm very much supportive of the notion that we have undervalued women, and particularly mothers, for so many years, probably for centuries. And I thought that this was, look at this, look at what we've done. And so while it was exceptional, the number of incidents, including the symbolic hole in the ceiling. I wouldn't say that. I mean, what a great moment.
And it happens early, so we're not giving anything
no,
away.
No, we're not. What an amazing image. Actually, she was pretty cool. Responding to it, I mean, I would have been comatose at that point if I had water rushing down a hole like
so
that.
So while she's clearly overwrought, taking her daughter to treatment, they get home to a pizza dinner, carry-out pizza
oh,
dinner.
Oh, what a great scene!
And her daughter starts yelling from the bathroom about water on the floor, and Rose goes to investigate and is you hear the splotchiness of her steps. And she gets to their, I'm assuming, master bedroom, and she looks up at the ceiling, and there's cracks and water dripping from it. And she calls her husband, who we learn is, I guess, a sea captain or
yes,
ship
right,
captain.
He is of a cruise ship.
So he's gone for 8 weeks. He's not there. And while she's telling him about, we just got home, the black hole opens and water just comes gushing through and floods. So that's how the film opens. They move into a really cheap, bad hotel, and everything just spirals from there. A
recurring annoying guy who tells her she's to move her car.
Yeah. So,
it's just
from
simply
that,
great.
Yeah, yes. Everything is like lemon juice, paper cut, no matter what it is. The desk clerk at the cheap motel they've been forced to stay at.
Yes, yes.
The people who are supposed to be fixing the hole in the ceiling and restoring their apartment. I mean, everything is going wrong from her perspective. And meanwhile, she's a therapist.
Just as I love this touch. She's a therapist who needs a therapist. And it's just wonderful because we always think these people have it together. I mean, who has more together than the therapist? And she does not have it together.
Well, and she's actually seeing one of her, I don't know if they're direct work colleagues, but they share office space, which is typical. As my friend Nancy, who watched the film with me,
yes,
who is
she
a therapist, she said, when you're in private practice, oftentimes you come together and you rent a suite and you have private rooms with the noise cancelers outside the room, which we see in the film. And so they're not necessarily employed together, but they're sharing therapeutic office.
I'll tell you, this
together.
Is a strange casting with Conan O'Brien. Isn't that? They even
it's unusual on its surface, but what did you think of his performance?
I thought his performance was perfect. I thought he was a therapist whom I would like to go to.
Really?
Yeah. I thought because he was cool, you know, because he was detached. Now, see, that's the kind of therapist I love. I don't want one who's involved.
Nancy and I both were like, our opinion of the film was, if you're thinking about going to therapy, don't watch this film.
Don't, that's right.
Because it's not a good representation of what good therapists do.
All right. What did you guys think of his relationship with her? Was there anything romantic in that?
No, but I think in the film, it serves as the romance in place of the husband. She's trying to connect with him. She's spending all this time with him, and they do break up.
And I thought that Christian Slater's husband wasn't perfect. In fact, I started looking up films about single moms and then correcting myself. She's not a single mom.
She's not.
She's married, but she might as well be.
She might as well be, because when she's having these conversations with Charles, her husband, he's off going to a baseball game. Like, they flew,
wonderful.
To a baseball game.
Yes.
And he's having dinner with whoever. And she's trying to deal with all these crises. And he wants to know why that apartment hasn't been fixed yet.
And Byrne is so good on this when he tells her that he has the ball. Oh, so you have time to go to a ball game. Yeah, I mean, just like we're going through it with her, and we understand damn well the irony of him talking about how he has this extra time, and she has no time.
No.
The way this film is framed, it moves absolutely at fast pace from one incident to another.
Which certainly is intentional, because we're we're seeing everything from Rose's perspective, whether it's true or not, in terms of the extremism and the absurdity.
Yes, right. Yeah,
of
yeah.
It. So everything is spiraling out of control at a faster and faster and faster and faster pace until she goes over the edge.
Well, I'm asking you and Nancy to hold off for our podcast.
I'm going to channel Nancy.
Isn't she? She is just a presence here already, I can tell. But anyway, if people want to hear more about what we have to say, and it's not what I have to say, it's what you have to, and Nancy have to say, they have to go to our podcast, WCBE, The Podcast Experience, and to our podcast, Back Talk. So, Mary, let me hear this now. What do you suggest about If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You?
It is worth seeing for Rose Byrne's performance.
Yes.
But it's a complex, challenging genre mishmash film that may or may not be to everybody's taste.
Yeah, and for me, it's annoying. And I have to say, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is annoying to me, only because it is so good. It's so overwhelming, and I think it's so true in its pieces, as I call it, a mosaic. In its mosaic about the life of any woman who has to deal with things that men even never could dream of, the difficulties that she has going with her life. And adding to that she is a therapist, so she understands the zaniness of it all. She sees it as work. Tell me about the lady who bails with, leaves the baby with
her. Oh, so one of her clients is named Carolyn, who is a new mother and clearly has some sort of attachment issue with her son.
God, what a
to the extent that she can't leave him.
And Riley's only, what, a few months old? Or
probably just a few months.
Yeah.
And in the middle of a session, she actually leaves to go to the bathroom and literally leaves. And so yet another crisis for Linda is she now has this crying baby who's breastfeeding, we know. She can't do anything about that. She goes to her therapist slash office co-renter in Conan O'Brien, and he's no help. In fact, he's in a session and he keeps trying to move her foot yes. out of the door and slam that door in her face. She eventually does take the, what my friend Nancy said was the right step. She called the husband, who was no help about coming to get the baby and actually wanted Linda to bring the baby to him, which from a therapist perspective, you're not supposed to transport your patients, too much liability. She eventually does call the police and the police take the baby and they,
I guess that's
they look for Carolyn, we assume.
Of course they would take the baby.
Yes.
It seems so strange to see the cop taking that baby away and I'm saying, well, now what's going to happen here? But they must have people on call to take care of
something
like abandoned babies.
Yes, yeah. I would assume so.
Yeah.
But this baby was abandoned by the mother but still has a father, and they know who the father is, and they know where the father lives.
Yes.
So my guess is they were providing transport.
You know what I love about this movie, too, is that it doesn't show the men. It doesn't show the husbands.
No.
And that's so perfect because they are absent.
And they are absent. They're just voices on the phone.
Yes. Brilliant. And in all of this that happens to our Rose Byrne character, to Linda, what am I supposed to believe about the experience of women?
Well, it's certainly you get a glimpse of how at certain times in life, it can be overwhelming the amount of responsibility that women have been given. Because even though I'm from the generation where I grew up believing I would get an education and have a job and maybe have children, get married, have children, have it all.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that same shift didn't happen, I would think, to the extent in society of if women are going to have it all, how much slack do the men pick up for what the women previously did? Generally, most women feel, and again, generally, not individual
That's
situations,
right. yes.
generally, that shift didn't happen to the magnitude that women shifted into having more responsibility as opposed to men taking on more responsibility, especially domestically. And that certainly the viewpoint of this film is that Linda is left with caring for the daughter with some sort of, I would assume, eating disorder. It's never really defined.
Well, isn't that a feeding tube?
It's a feeding tube. And she's being told her daughter has to gain weight to stay in the program, and they would have to reassess this, which is another pressure point because the doctor, played by Mary Bronstein, our writer and director and executive
Dr.
producer.
Dr. Spring or something like that.
Yes, is the doctor who's trying to get Linda to focus on, I need you to come to groups therapy.
Yes.
I need you to meet with me to talk about your daughter's hair. And you can see Linda is just like, this is just one more thing. My eyes are glazing over. I can't really handle doing anything more with this. I'm living in a cheap hotel. I can't get any sleep because my daughter's feeding machine is constantly going off. So you just see from Linda's perspective, I think having worked at the James Cancer Hospital for many years and Nancy as a therapist, the way that Dr. Spring and the group therapy is portrayed probably wasn't very accurate as to how you would really be treated. Like, they wouldn't kick her daughter out of treatment because obviously she has an issue.
Yeah.
But from Linda's perspective, which is what we're supposed to appreciate here, she has one more person telling her from her perspective that she's not doing a good job and that she needs to do more. And we're supposed to feel that, and we certainly do.
Adding to that, the mantra that they're not responsible.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Which is on a cake in group therapy, which my friend Nancy assured me would never happen.
Oh,
You would never see group therapy presented as like a high school lecture with a cake. It just was very unrealistic. But ironically, Mary Bronstein actually spent 8 years. She has her master's in psychology and spent 8 years doing, I think, children's therapy. So again, we're looking at things in the extreme view, not reality view, because Linda's lack of sleep and all the pressures on her are causing her to look through this lens of absurdity and extremism, because she's in a downward spiral. And you certainly feel that and sense that. And then we have the image of the black hole, which comes up repeatedly.
I know.
The film.
It's a great one. I mean, the whole film is surreal.
Surreal. It's almost like a Dolly painting in some respects.
And you can't go in there expecting there to be any resolution, nor for men to feel better about themselves.
We'll say the character of James, who's the superintendent at the motel, played by A$AP Rocky, actually is trying to be a decent guy.
But
Linda has reached a point where she's refusing delivery of that, except for the drugs that he's willing to order her online.
Another good character is the lady behind the counter selling.
Oh, the hotel desk clerk.
Right.
Won't sell her a cheap bottle of wine until after two.
Right, after two. It's 1:58.
Yeah.
And by the time I ring this up, it's going to be after two, so you can't have it. Isn't that so real? There are dorks like that who treat her that way.
Right.
And it just compounds. Again, I admire so much the frenetic nature of this film, but yet I see truths every few minutes, and I could isolate those and feature those in something else. And particularly having a child, and what I like is, and you had mentioned it, how we don't see the child till the end, and how figuratively that works.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not going to put blame on the child, and we're not going to put blame on the mother. We don't see the child. It's an issue.
Emotionally, it was intentional on Mary Bronstein's part, because she felt if you saw the child, your sympathy would shift to the child because of human nature. So in this case, she really wants the audience focused on Linda and Linda's perspective and what she's going through with one crisis after another.
I like when we get to see Christian Slater
at the end.
I like it. There's a nice touch to that, a sense of reality. And it seems like he might be a good guy. You know, if he's got a job, what is he going to do? He's the captain of a ship, of a cruise ship. He can't be there. And so therefore, the phone conversation is just delightful. You know, he seems like such a goon on there. But then you begin to see, well, it's not all his fault. I mean, you know, she's got to deal
okay,
with it.
There you go. See, that's the problem with
there
men. It's not all his fault.
There you go. Very good.
They have a daughter in crisis.
Yes.
He leaves to go be the breadwinner and leaves a very intense situation with his wife and daughter just to her. And he comes in at the end and gets the hole fixed in the roof because he's a guy, and then wants to go rescue his daughter as well and make things all better after she's gone through weeks of hell to try and maintain as best she could. And even when she tells him she needs help at the beginning of the film, he leaves it all to her and then comes in on his white horse in his white, spiffy captain's uniform.
And not the way in Sentimental Value.
No.
Where you have him away because he's a director.
Right.
You know, what else is he going to do except that I don't think he makes good connections when he has the chance.
No.
And I mean, he needs to repair when he comes back. But again, I find so many films these days with the disconnect between parents and children, and especially between fathers and daughters. That's why I'm so anxious for people to see this if they can stand it.
Well, that's a hearty recommendation.
It is. I guess I wish I had gone with you and Nancy. You guys would have set me straight.
We could have.
As I went, oh my God, what is this about? This is so disturbing. I was trying to think of Housewives, and I came across with one 2 years ago, A Night Bitch. With Amy Adams.
Yes.
You never saw it, did you?
Yes, I did. Okay. I think we may have
didn't
actually
we?
Reviewed
I thought,
that.
Yeah. You know, and that one, a different kind of take because
certainly.
Certainly, yeah. Because, yes, she's a housewife.
Yeah, and she has this fantasy reality of how she wants to react viscerally.
Why you and I always do the good movies? Stop
versus how she's acting in real life.
Yeah.
This film, though, is truly about somebody experiencing mental or emotional crises. And it's a tonal film in terms of it's constant in its point of view.
Yes.
From Linda. Whether what we're seeing that we're experiencing with her is really happening is left for you to question and wonder. There are certainly some things that clearly did not happen. For instance, there's a scene where Linda removes the feeding tube from her daughter. And the feeding tube, it's like the hallway for Jo Beth Williams in Poltergeist, where it keeps getting longer and longer and longer and longer. And then you see the wound heal in front of her eyes, and it wouldn't do that. Huh. So, I mean, there are things that are very absurd and fantastical like that, but they're representative of, again, Linda's perspective. Mm-hmm. That feeding tube is 30 yards long. Mm-hmm. And she has to keep pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling.
What an annoying film. I'm not going to recommend this for your husband, Bob.
Bob did watch the trailer.
Ah.
And immediately said that Nancy and I were on our own to watch this film.
We need to go see F1 together or something.
Maybe.
Maybe.
You call him on that.
I know. Mary, the film is called If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. You and I are watching this, and thank you for selecting it because of Rose Byrne's performance.
Absolutely.
And if you took nothing away from this, you'd say, I now see one of our premier actresses.
Absolutely. And Rose is Australian. You've probably seen her in Damages or on television. Or I first really became aware of her in Bridesmaids as one of the bridesmaids. She's a beautiful woman. She's an incredible dramatic actress. She's also an incredible comedic actress. She's really one of the premier actresses of our time. This film was actually made in 2023, shot on location in New York. It began making the International Film Festival rounds January of 2025. It was released here in the United States in October. And the pedigree of the film has been to receive a lot of nominations, several wins, specifically for Rose Byrne's performance. In fact, she just won the Golden Globe for Best Lead Actress in a Comedy or Musical, which tells you how
good God
this film is
category.
A gender mashup. Not sure where to place it.
Really?
Because there are some parts that are pretty funny, including the hamster scene, which I will not give away.
That is good. You're right.
But she's also nominated for Best Lead Actress in a Film for an Academy Award. It is certainly well-earned.
Mary Rena, the film is If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. It is worth seeing for cinephiles. It's worth seeing for therapists.
About what not to
friends.
Do.
And I'm sitting here thinking about you, and you have a Rose Byrne face. The kind that can sustain almost a whole film of close-ups.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know about that.
Well, what I love what it does is that it doesn't glamorize her, but it doesn't put her down either.
Clearly.
Her face is just perfectly proportioned, and her responses are not over the top. And I just admire the filmmaker for doing that, and I admire Rose Byrne for this, and I'll be looking for her, or I know you will, and you will tell me the next